Okay, it's October 29th, 2014, Ljubljana, Slovenia. My watch with a date on it broke, and this one doesn't have a date, and I never know what date it is anymore. So I thought we would study Sanatana Goswami's commentary to one of the verses of the Dhammadharastika. Is that all right? Okay. So I picked text 5. We have somebody translating somewhere for the people who need translation. And could I get some water? Do we have some translation happening? Yes? Are we translating? Okay, so you'll just tell me if I go too fast? You won't tell me. You'll just be upset, but you won't tell me. No, please tell me. Okay, so if you need translation, please sit there. So text 5 is Idam te mukam bojam avyaktanilaya vrittam kundalai snikharakchascha gopya muhushcham bitam bimbarakta dharamme manasyavirastam alam lakshalabhe. O Lord, your lotus-like face is completely surrounded by very dark blue, glossy, reddish-tinted curling hair and is kissed again and again by Mother Yasoda. Your lotus face is endowed with lips red as bimba fruits. May it always remain visible in my heart. The attainment of millions of other boons is completely useless to me. So Sanatana Goswami's commentary. He says, and furthermore, the longing to see your Sri Mukha, your divine lotus face, that is Parama Manohara, supremely enchanting, is stated in this verse beginning with Idam Te. Sometime, while one is meditating deeply within and perceives such indescribable beauty and splendor, that is what is revealed in this verse. His face is Prapula Kamalakara. It resembles a fully blossomed lotus flower. Nikila Santapahari. His face is the remover of all kinds of distress. And Paramananda Rasa Maya. And it is pervaded with the supreme mellows of pure bliss. That lotus face, Manasi Muhur Avirastam. Oh, thank you so much. May it be revealed again and again within my mind, he says. So we'll stop here for a moment. So here's Sanatana Goswami is explaining the face of God. So in most religious traditions of the world, they say either that God has no face or that if he has one, you're not allowed to see it. Although it says in the Bible that Moses saw God face to face, like a friend speaks with another friend. But generally, most religious teachers, they tell you, there's no face. Or if you saw the face of God, you would die. So terrible. So here, the face of God is described like a fully blossomed lotus flower. And the remover of all distress and full of bliss. And Sanatana Goswami says that this face of God is sometimes revealed when one is engaged in meditation. So, of course, Srila Prabhupada told us that we should come to a point in our practice of bhakti where we see Krishna face to face, just like we see each other. That we should come to the point that we are seeing Krishna always. Of course, to do that requires that Krishna can trust us, that he knows that we actually love him, that we're not simply going to criticize. Right? We only reveal ourselves to people who we know that we can trust. I'm sure we've all had an experience where we open our heart to someone and then they just criticize us, yes? They just use our revealing ourselves as some excuse to find fault with us. So when Krishna sees that we actually love him, when all we're thinking about is how to be appreciative, and then he shows us his very, very beautiful face. So Sanatana Goswami goes on to say, what does that lotus face look like? So if we want to know what God looks like, then we ask somebody who's seen him. If you want to know what anyone looks like, right, you have to ask someone who's seen them, what do they look like? And he says, it is surrounded, Ritam, by curling hair, Kuntala, that is very dark blue of Yaktanila, glossy Snigha, and tinged with red, Rakta. So first we're describing Krishna's hair. So his hair is surrounding his face. It's curling. It's very dark blue. So it's almost black. Almost black, but bluish. And very shiny, very glossy. Everything about Krishna is very shiny. It's described that Krishna's cheeks are so shiny that when his makara earrings are swinging, that they're reflecting on his cheeks. Like his cheeks are like a sapphire mirror. So Krishna's hair is also very glossy, and it has red highlights. So it's very dark blue, almost blackish, and it has red highlights in the hair. So this is the color of the hair of God. Of course, he has different incarnations, like in the incarnation Kapila Dev. He has blonde hair. He has golden hair. And as Lord Varaha, he has just reddish hair or sometimes whitish hair. So he has all different colors of hair, all different colors of form. But in his original form, he has this very, very, very dark blue, curly, glossy, tinged with red hair. And, of course, in this world, I remember one time being at an airport with a group of devotees. We were all traveling together someplace. I can't remember where we were or where we were going. And in the airports now, they often have some television screen going all the time, right? Because people in modern society, if they don't have entertainment constantly, they don't know what to do. You know, it's quite interesting. You know, formerly people would have some entertainment in the village every evening. I mean, it was simple. Somebody would tell a story of the Ramayana or Mahabharata. Maybe there'd be a puppet show or something like that. You know, in the spiritual world, it's described that Krishna watches acrobats and comedians and things like that. And in the evening, there was a time for entertainment in the evening. But nowadays, people want to be entertained constantly. It's quite, you know, if they're not entertained constantly, they, oh no, oh no. What will I do? I might have to just think. The concept of, I mean, I don't know, when I was young, I would just like sit out in the forest by the water and write poetry. I don't know if anybody ever does that kind of thing anymore. So anyway, in the airports, they constantly have, you know, some entertainment going. And I remember there was some advertisement and some attractive young woman had this gorgeous hair. I mean, just, you wonder if anybody really has that hair. You know, if it was a wig or, I've just never seen anybody with hair like that in real life. And she's just kind of swirling it around. And I remember with the group of devotees that I was with, all the men looked at the floor instantly. It was interesting. So, I mean, if we become so attracted by some ordinary hair of some earth person, you know, ordinary hair is not really very attractive. How do we know that? Because if the hair was lying on the floor, would you be attracted? If you just see some ball of hair lying on the ground? Is it like, do you go, oh? Then nobody would have to look away. Nobody would say, oh, I can't look at the hair lying on the ground. It's actually, it's not very attractive. It's disgusting. But somehow or other, when it's connected with someone who's alive, when it's connected with a soul, then we can feel very attracted. Right? So imagine how attractive is the hair of God, which is actually alive. There's no difference between Krishna and his form. It's not like us that temporarily, while the soul is in the body appears attractive because of as the presence of the soul. That's why the body appears attractive. Dead bodies are not particularly attractive. And parts of a body are not particularly attractive, yes? You know, somebody has beautiful eyes, but if you just see some eyeballs, you know, it's not particularly attractive. What makes it attractive is the soul. So if you had the supreme soul, the soul of all souls, and the hair of the soul of all souls, so just, you know, Krishna has this surrounding of this very, very dark blue, almost blackish, with red highlights and curling, and it's very soft and it's very shiny. So that is Krishna's hair. And of course, Krishna doesn't usually just have his hair. His hair is usually decorated with something, although it's not mentioned in this particular verse. So what kind of decorations does Krishna have in his hair? Peacock feathers. He particularly likes peacock feathers. Sometimes we have this idea that every time there's any kind of painting of any incarnation of Krishna, we have to put a peacock feather on it. And sometimes we think that no one else can wear peacock feathers, but it's described that the cowherd boys also decorate themselves with peacock feathers. And the gopis also decorate themselves. It's not only Krishna who decorates them. That's not one of Krishna's insignias. So Krishna has his special insignias that only he has. Anyone knows what they are? What does only Krishna have? No, I'm sure that other people have makari earrings. There's two things that only Krishna has, two. Yeah? Yes, a jewel. It's called the Kastuba jewel. And it's a resting place of all the jivas. So only Krishna wears this Kastuba jewel. And what else? No, I'm sure many cowherd boys and gopis wear crowns. No, I'm sure many wear crowns, not only Krishna. He has a Srivatsa mark, the mark of Lakshmi Devi, this swirling hair on his chest. So those marks only Krishna has, no one else has, but many of the residents of the spiritual world decorate themselves with peacock feathers. But he likes to decorate himself with peacock feathers. Sometimes Krishna makes a crown out of peacock feathers, so he weaves the peacock feathers together into a crown. What other decorations does Krishna often have in his hair? Flowers, many times flowers. Yes. And it's said that in Vrindavan, Krishna likes the flower decorations more than he likes the jewels of Vaikuntha. He considers the flower decorations more beautiful than jewels. And there's many descriptions of where Krishna and the gopis, and maybe the cowherd boys too, but at least the acharyas give us descriptions of the gopis and Krishna, that make jewelry out of flowers. So they prepare flowers to look like jewelry. And Krishna will wear these in his hair. And he also wears jewels in his hair. Often his hair is decorated with pearls and other jewels. Okay, so going on here with Sanatana Goswami's commentary, he says the word vritam suggests that just as a lotus flower is surrounded with hovering honeybees, similarly the Lord's lotus face is encircled with curling locks that bounce around whenever he moves. So I'm sure you've seen somebody with curls, that when they move, the curls bounce. So Krishna's hair is bouncing. And again, Krishna's hair is not... it's not material. So Krishna's hair is himself. It's fully alive. It's fully part of his personality. Angani yasya sakalandriya vritimanti apasyanti panti kalayanti charam jaganti ananda chinmaya sadudvala vigrahasya. Every part of Krishna's form is equal to every other part. So his hair is also fully Krishna. He's not that he's something different from his hair. So Sanatana Goswami goes on, the word gopya by the gopi indicates that his face is kissed again and again by either Sri Yasoda or by Sri Radha. So generally in the translation we say it's kissed again and again by Mother Yasoda, but the verse simply says by a gopi. So generally it's assumed to be Yasoda because this particular lila is happening when Krishna is a little boy and Mother Yasoda is tying him up. But of course Radharani is in this prayer also in the last verse, right? Namo Radhikaye. So perhaps it's Radharani who's kissing Krishna, or perhaps it's some other gopi. It's not mentioned exactly which gopi is kissing Krishna. Maybe it's Mother Rohini, or maybe Lalita, or some other gopi maybe kissing Krishna also. So the word muhu, Sanatana Goswami says again and again, is relative to this word gopya, and it reads properly exactly where it is in the verse. So Mother Yasoda or some gopi is kissing Krishna again and again and again. And we've seen this with a mother and young child. Yes, everybody has seen this, that the mother takes the face of the young child and she's holding it. She's just kissing the child again and 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 again. So this is the scene, and it's often Krishna's often described like that. When the kings who were imprisoned by Jarasandhar saw Krishna, they felt like all of their senses were relishing the beauty of the Lord, including their sense of taste, that they felt like they were just kissing the Lord and tasting the Lord. This is also described when Krishna goes to Mathura. So that, of course, we are doing this with prasadam. Prasadam is the taste of the Lord. And sometimes, especially if you're in the proper mood when you're taking prasadam, it just becomes this overwhelming experience, yes? You've had that experience? I think my first experience with that was when I was very new to practicing Krishna consciousness. I was staying overnight in the ashram, and the devotees gave me some prasadam to take with me to my job for lunch. So I remember they gave me, I don't know everything that was there, but I know they gave me a puri made of white flour and some chutney. It was a very unusual lunch that they gave me. And they also gave me a sandesh, just plain sandesh in a little ball. And so I was walking to the train on my way to work, and I opened up the bag, and I'm just looking at this, because it was also unusual. You know, I just had never seen any food look like this before. So what is this? I guess this is kind of bread. And when I saw the little white ball, I thought, I want to eat this now. I'm not going to wait until lunch. So on the way to the train, I started eating this. And I'm, what is this? Yeah. And it wasn't a very big, you know, but maybe as big as a golf ball. I mean, it was small. But I made it last a very, very, very long time. You know, and all day I was meditating on this sandesh. The whole time I was at work, that was all I was thinking about. And I came back to the temple and I said, what was that white ball? And so that is a taste of God. We may not always appreciate when we take prasadam, but that is the taste of God. And one just wants to taste again and again and again. Like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he said, what is this prasadam? It's simply ordinary ingredients. Right? When I came back to the temple, I said, how did you make that? And they said, oh, milk and sugar. I said, there must be something else in there. And they said, oh, maybe some lemon juice. I said, maybe that was it. but it's really, it's the taste of God. Mahaprabhu says, you know, someone's just sugar and some little black pepper and this and that. But what is this extraordinary taste? And it is that Krishna has tasted it. And what does God taste like? So Mother Yasoda, she's kissing baby Krishna. She's experiencing, what does God taste like? And so she's kissing him again and again and again and again, that she can never get enough. And this, of course, makes Krishna very, very happy. So this is what, even for each of us, what makes us happy is if we are the catalyst for the happiness of somebody else. This is one of the most satisfying things for us. If someone else is happy, and they're not just happy, but they're happy because of me. Yes? Does that make us happy? You've done something for someone, and as a result of what you've done, or as a result of who you are, someone else is happy. Isn't that our greatest happiness? So today somebody was writing me and they told me, oh, my life has become wonderful. Everything is so happy. And, you know, my husband and I are in love with each other again. And our whole house is full of Krishna consciousness. And my husband is so enlivened in his spiritual life after so many years. So I was visiting them some months ago and I did a little counseling for each of them. And I was thinking, oh, maybe it's from something I did. Maybe I can take some credit for their happiness. So that's natural, right? Yes? That we want to have some credit for other people's happiness. So Krishna is also like that. Krishna is also like that. He wants to be the cause of others' happiness. Of course, really, Krishna is always the cause of our happiness. Even if someone has happiness in the mode of ignorance, they're getting happiness from Krishna's energy, yes? It's not possible to get any happiness separate from Krishna, really. That's not actually possible. Impossible. But Krishna wants it directly and acknowledged, right? If you steal my money and use it to buy something that makes you happy, I don't like that. That doesn't please me. But if I buy you a gift and that makes you happy, that pleases me. So Krishna wants to be directly the source of happiness and he wants to be acknowledged. So when Mother Yasoda is kissing Krishna again and again and feeling happy, that makes Krishna very happy. As soon as one meditates on Krishna's hair or sees Krishna's hair, one thinks, oh, now I am very happy. What beautiful hair. Of course, in this world, that kind of thing is always tinged with exploitation. So the woman in the advertisement, she wants to show you her beautiful hair, which was probably not even her hair, just so she can make some money. Right? Or so someone can control us. But Krishna is interested just in this exchange of love. Okay, so then Sanatana Goswami going on, he says, may that divine lotus face, Muhuschumbitam, kissed repeatedly by the supremely fortunate Gopi Mama Manasi, in my mind, Avirastha, may it manifest even once. This is the meaning. So the devotee is so eager to see Krishna that he's saying, even once, please manifest in my mind. Of course, this is another line in this prayer. Ekakshidrisyan, I want to see you at least once. Of course, will that be enough? Will that be enough? The devotee is saying, Krishna, let me see you at least one time. At least one time. And then will you say, okay, now I've seen God. Now we're done. No, of course, after one sees Krishna one time, one becomes obsessed. Obsessed with seeing him again. Just like we were talking about sweet balls. So I heard a story, devotees were traveling in a very remote part of America, a place where not very many people lived, and they stopped at a gas station, a petrol station. And they were wearing, you know, dhotis and shikas and tilak. And one girl ran out of the station and said, you're Hare Krishnas, right? Yes, yes, we're Hare Krishnas. Do you have any of those little white balls? She said, I got one 5 years ago. I've been looking for them ever since. I had that experience also with the chanting that I heard on the radio, the Brahma Samhita that we play every morning for greeting the deities. So it was on a record album that George Harrison produced. And I used to listen every morning on the radio to whatever was it playing, and they played this song, you know, Govinda Mariputasham Tamaham Bhajami. And I became obsessed. What is that song? What is that song? Who is singing that song? How can I buy that song? Where is that song? So just imagine, some of you I'm sure don't have to imagine because you've already seen Krishna in meditation, but anyway, for the rest of us. So we can imagine what it is like to see Krishna. And once you've seen Krishna, then you become very obsessed. But the devotee is saying, well, at least once, at least once, at least once. May you manifest in my mind. So this is a very frequent prayer of the devotees. You'll find this prayer throughout the Bhagavatam, throughout the songs like this song of the Acharyas. Please manifest in my mind. Please manifest in my mind. Please manifest in my mind. So how do you think we could induce Krishna to manifest in our mind? Anybody have any idea? What would make Krishna want to manifest in our mind? Yes?
Purity.
Purity. Just like I hope most of us, I hope, we like to go to a place that's clean, yes? Some people don't care, but we like to go to a place that's clean. So, you know, as when I travel, I have very little control over where I stay. It's just like, okay, you stay here. Okay. And usually it's clean, but not always. Sometimes it's not. I remember one time one devotee had taken me to stay at a place where there was a new project. They wanted to showcase. Oh, Urmila, we want to show you our new project. So they take me there and everything was so dirty. You just touched anything and it was all black with dirt and your socks were black and everything was just greasy filth everywhere. So it's like, well, I really don't want you to stay here. You don't even want to walk in the place, right? You can't even put down something. Okay, if I'm going to clean, where do I put my bag? It will become covered with black dirt. So Krishna wants to stay in a heart that's very clean. We have the story of the cleaning of the Gundicha temple. So the heart should be very clean. Of course, what's interesting is who is it really that cleans the heart? Krishna cleans it. So I had to do that in that room. You know, I went to the room and I had to say, please give me a cloth. Give me some water. Give me a broom. I clean the room myself. It doesn't happen very often, but sometimes. So that is what it's like with Krishna. But he will only clean by invitation. He will not clean without an invitation. As Prabhupada says, if you want things to remain as they are, then that's a different story. So Krishna will manifest in our heart, and actually will manifest always. Narada Muni says that whenever he calls on the Lord, Krishna manifests on the lotus of his heart as if called. Immediately comes. So that's what Krishna likes to do, but he will only come to a clean heart and only if we want a clean heart. And we may say, well, I want a clean heart, but the reality is often not like that. The reality is often not like that. And you can just try a very simple experiment and you can get to see whether you really want a clean heart or not. And you can see whether or not you can go to the Lord and say, my dear Lord, please show me the truth about myself and my heart. And if you can say that prayer and mean it, please show me the truth about myself. Please turn on the light, Gyanadipena Bhashvata. Please turn on the light in my heart and show me the truth about myself. And most of us don't want that at all. Most of us don't want that at all. Another little evidence is how we do and how we react when somebody points out that we've done something wrong. So I had this experience, I have it frequently, but I had it not that long ago, that someone had done something very disturbing. And I said to this devotee, yeah, you know, you just did something very disturbing. You just insulted my friend. And this is a longtime friend of mine, and you've just insulted this person. And, you know, I'd like it if you would apologize. And the devotee said, why should I apologize? Well, I didn't really mean it, and you're just misinterpreting what I said, and it really is like this, and I don't think they were really offended, and, you know, why are you bothering me for nothing? And I said, I really think you should ask Krishna to fix this. Well, I don't think anything needs to be fixed. festival, he said to me. And I said, well, I don't know. I think if you call somebody a chimpanzee, it really does need to be fixed. But this is often the way that we respond when we're corrected. You know, I didn't really do anything wrong. You're just oversensitive. You're just overreacting. You didn't understand properly. I was just joking, or something like that. So if this is the way that we respond, then that's another good indicator that we just want things to remain as they are, that we really do not want to clean our heart. Of course, the very nice thing about cleaning our heart, again, is that we don't clean our heart. Krishna does. Krishna does. So also, it's quite common that I'll hear from some devotee, oh, Krishna showed me some of the dirt in my heart, but I just didn't know what to do about it. I just thought, oh, I can't do anything about this. It's too big. It's too hard. And I said, well, you don't have to do anything about it. All you have to do is ask Krishna to take care of it, and he will. And so that is how the heart becomes clean. Echinvitam swakata Krishna punyashravana kirtanam riddhintasta abhadrani vidyunoti suritsata. So Krishna cleanses the heart of the truthful devotee. The truthful devotee. Not just the official devotee or the ritualistic devotee or the casual devotee, but the devotee who wants to see the truth. And the devotee who says, Krishna, I want to see you. I want you manifest in my mind, and I'm willing to have my heart cleaned in order to do that. whatever it takes to clean my heart, you please come and show me the truth and clean up my heart. Okay, Sanatana Goswami goes on and says, or else the word sada always found in the previous verse carries over to its definitive conclusion in the present verse, thereby indicating may it always manifest. This intention can also be accepted. So Sanatana Goswami is saying that one can understand this verse as meaning, can you come in my mind once, or can you come there all the time? So I was thinking, first you asked me to speak about Vrindavan. So first I was thinking we could look at the song Vrindavan Ramyastana by Narottama Das Thakur. And then I thought, well, no, it's Kartik. Let's meditate on the Dhammadharastika. But in Vrindavan Ramyastana also, Narottama Das Thakur, Sadai Supuruka More Mane, Sada, would you always remain in my mind? And we have Bhakti Vinod's wonderful song, Raha Nisidin, that you please stay in my mind both day and night, that you never leave. Of course, this is the essence of spiritual life, to always be absorbed in Krishna, to never forget Krishna. You know, for many of us practicing beginning devotees, we're lucky if we have Krishna in our mind once in a month or two. But the idea is that Krishna should be fully manifest there with his beautiful lotus-like face and dark curling hair at every moment, that we can be fully enchanted. So what does it mean to have a clean heart? Not only that the heart is clean of anartas, but that the heart is full of love. That it will be fun to be there. Like, why will I come to someone's house and stay there if they're my friends, yes? So just a clean house, I mean, that's nice that it's clean. But I don't want to stay just in a clean place. I want to stay in a clean place with my friends, yes? Isn't it? So Krishna wants to stay with his friends, with those who love him. And then he will stay always. Finally, Sanatana Goswami says, that lotus face is especially described thus, Bimbavad Raktadaram, he whose lips are cherry red like the bimba fruit. So now there's a description of Krishna's hair, Krishna's cheeks getting kissed, and Krishna's lips that are just like a bimba fruit, cherry red. If that form is manifest within my mind, I will be fully satisfied. Therefore, it is said about Lakshalabhai, the attainment of millions and millions of other types of benedictions, alum, they are of no use to me whatsoever. This is the meaning. This is most definitely the message that is conveyed by the fifth verse, thus ends Sanatana Goswami's Digdarshini Tika on the fifth sloka of Sri Dhammadharastika. So when one sees Krishna's face with his cherry red lips and his cheeks being kissed by the gopis and his curling hair, then one doesn't want anything else. So I don't think there's anybody so beautiful in this world that you don't want anything else. Right? Even if you could find that woman on the TV with her fake hair. And if you could, you know, if you could look at her all the time, you'd still want something else, yes? You would still want to eat, and you would still want a protection from the rain, and you would probably still want your mobile phone, or, you know, you'd want other things, yes? Isn't it? You know, even when people are really, really in love in this world, they don't say, I just want to look at you, and I don't want anything. No matter how attractive somebody is. But with Krishna, he's so attractive that if one just has that vision, then that's all. Nothing else matters. And that's our process in bhakti yogi, as a bhakti yogi, of becoming detached and becoming self-realized. Our process is not detachment and self-realization by negation. We are not trying just, you know, I don't want the world, I don't want the world, I don't want the world. Or I'm not this body, I'm not this body, I'm not this body, I'm not this body. But our process is, oh, how beautiful Krishna is. How attractive Krishna is. How beautiful and attractive Krishna is. How beautiful and attractive Krishna is. And of course, we go beyond that because that could just be Shantaras. Let me just look at how beautiful Krishna is. But we go beyond to just looking at how beautiful Krishna is to serving him. And to reciprocating with him and trying to please him. So any questions or comments? Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, you mentioned the Srivatsa. How does it look like?
How does it look like? Yeah. Sometimes it's described as golden and sometimes it's described as white. It's a curling hair on the chest of the Lord. It's described in Ananda Vrindavan Champu that when Krishna first appeared as a little baby, Mother Yasoda thought that some milk had spilled on his chest when she saw the Srivatsa, and she was trying to clean it off. Yes?
Is there any difference, is there a difference between seeing Krishna face to face and seeing him in our meditation?
Oh, what a lovely question. Yes. And the description is that seeing Krishna in meditation is generally happens at the stage of bhava, and seeing him face to face generally happens at the stage of prema. And I just was reading an interesting article about Jiva Goswami, and that Jiva Goswami's recommendation in the Sandarbhas is that rather than meditating on Krishna in the lotus of the heart, one should meditate on Krishna in the lotus of the Dham in Vrindavan. And yes. And we can also explain as far as meditation on Krishna that for the beginning devotee, meditation on Krishna is with the mind. It's using the mind. And so when you're meditating on Krishna, you're really, in one sense, imagining. Prabhupada uses that word, imagine. In a lecture in Geneva, Switzerland, Srila Prabhupada says, so chanting Hare Krishna means you imagine, he says. He uses the word imagine. He says, you imagine that within your throne there is a diamond, within your heart there is a diamond throne, and Krishna is sitting on it, and you are bathing him with Ganga and Jamuna water, and you are dressing him, and you are ornamenting him. And then Prabhupada goes on and saying, but this is real, it is not false. Although you are imagining Krishna's accepting. And of course, the story of this is the Brahmana who was imagining that he was doing deity worship. So in his mind, he was doing deity worship. So he was imagining that there is the deity, and I am bringing him water from all the different rivers in gold pots and silver pots, and I'm bringing very wonderful dishes. And this is called Manasapuja, that one is worshiping in the mind. Jamuna said that when Prabhupada installed her at a London Ishwar, that at that time they didn't have all the proper paraphernalia. And he instructed her in giving the Lord a lot of the paraphernalia mentally. So there's that kind of meditation on Krishna. You know, if you just remember the form of the deity that you see with the material eyes made of stone or wood or brass, or you remember some picture, some painting you've seen of Krishna, or you take some description like this from the Shastra and you create some image in your mind. So there's that kind of meditation on Krishna. And for the beginner, that's the only kind of meditation on Krishna that you can do. You just can't do any other kind of meditation on Krishna. Now, at a certain point, it's explained by Lord Kapiladeva that Krishna becomes attracted to that and he personally manifests. So that is a revealed manifestation, just like sometimes a person may be looking at the deity and instead of seeing something carved out of a material element, they see that there is Krishna. They actually see him fully present there. So there's so many times that this happens to devotees. And this can happen in the mind also, that Krishna becomes attracted and he manifests in the mind. So there's those two kinds of meditation. One is we're making an effort with our mind, and one is Krishna is appearing himself. And Krishna is much more likely to appear if one is already making an effort. You know, if you're trying to contact me, I'm much more likely to respond than if you're not trying to contact me. Anybody else? No? Okay. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Damodar Lila ki jai.